Coming up on podcast 1415, why are police offering a reward to find the driver of a flying Tesla? Well, stick around, I'll tell you more. Also on the show today, Electrify America get a new design of charging stations and some nicer places to charge as well. Jaguar Land Rover could have their own battery factory, and the very nice Neo ET7 starts production in China. Custom deliveries start very soon. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily, your trusted source of EV information. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Here's what happened on Friday, 25th of March. Well, we'll start off with news of LG. They are a supplier of people like Tesla, building a new battery factory in Arizona. Huge news, because LG announcing this $1.4 billion investment as demand for EVs throughout the US skyrockets. Now, that bit of the company is called LG Energy Solutions, in case you were wondering, and they're spending that almost $1.5 billion to meet demand for what they call prominent startups. Another North American company. So that's as much information that we can bring you. Is Tesla a prominent startup, or are they now the establishment? Are they the ones fighting off the newcomers like Lucid and Rivian? Well, the factory will be operational by 2024, says LG, to supply those so-called prominent startups. With their cylindrical cells, the Arizona plant will be LG's first ever US factory to make cylindrical electric battery cells, typically used by the likes of Tesla and Lucid. They both use 2170s. Rivian uses 2170s. Lucid have that production facility in Arizona as well. That would put the cell production close by where Lucid actually assembled the vehicles. So that bit would make sense. At the minute, we're still doing 2 and 2 equals 5, but when we get more details, we'll let you know. And staying with battery factories, CATL, the world's largest automotive cell maker, Chinese company CATL. And yes, amazing things are happening in China. But as much as I always talk about the positives on this podcast and the huge cell production facilities being built, remember as well that so much of China's grid is dirty. Yes, they're investing hugely in solar and wind, but also new coal-powered electricity generation as well. It's not like they're not doing the really disgusting, dirty fossil stuff as well in China. Such is their appetite, their thirst for growth and energy. So, yeah, they're doing a lot with renewables, but they're doing a lot with non-renewables as well and fossil fuels, which is why it's good news that CATL have been granted the status of the world's first zero-carbon EV battery factory. It's an internationally recognised specification for carbon neutrality for their new EV battery plant in China. It's PAS 2060. For those that want to know what the certificate's called. And this certification marks a big milestone for CATL, because it's all well and good making EV battery cells. Of course, those vehicles that end up using them will be zero emission at the tailpipe. But what if the process of making those battery cells is really dirty? Well, that they can now say, at least in this one facility, that their Sichuan plant is going to be the facility that sets an example of how battery production can be done carbon neutrally. So it was a lot of steps they had to go through to get this certification, a trailblazing smart management system, they say, which enables all the data to be interconnected around the plant, the operational data as well, to ensure that everything is done safely, reliably, but also to a very low carbon operation. The forklifts are all electric forklifts. The employees are encouraged to drive to the factory in electric vehicles. CATL is emerging as a leader in EV battery production on a global scale, the world's number one right now. And they began phase one of production at their newest EV battery facility in China, according to futurecar.com. When that's completed, that'll be the world's largest EV battery factory, with 120 gigawatt hours of annual production, which is just huge, isn't it? And again, if you say, well, that's going to be, depending on the size of the EV batteries that they are made, you know, 1.2 to 1.4 million electric vehicles could be made with the sales from that new plant alone, which is just brilliant, brilliant news. They say the plant will be more than three times the size of something like Tesla's Nevada facility alongside Panasonic, which many people are familiar with. CATL are investing $2.6 billion in their new plant, creating 10,000 new jobs when it'll be fully operational. I'll pop a link to Future Car in the show notes so you can read more. Electrify America are next in the news today, creating what they call human-centered EV charging stations. And my first thought when I read this is, so you mean their charging stations until now haven't been human-centered? And if you weren't designing your charging stations until now to be centered around humans, who did you think was going to be using them, Electrify America? Anyway, it's bizarre. Clearly they're proud of their new charging stations, their new chargers, and I agree, they look great. But saying that they're now going to be human-centered does beg the question a little bit. Well, how bad were the old ones? They've got some really good stuff happening, their new charging stations. The new sites in, to begin with, California and New York will have solar panel awnings. They'll have lounges to wait in. They'll have battery backup systems as well. The company is rolling out a new slimmer EV charger design as well, all about improving the experience, according to TheVerge.com. The Verge says that Electrify America's new stations are organized around comfort, security, and amenities. And that is all about ensuring that however long you take to charge your EV, whether it's a 15 to 20 minute fast charge, or maybe you've got an EV that takes 40 to 45, 50 minutes possibly to get to the level of charge that you want, that you can do it safely and comfortably as well. Their goal is to create inviting charging stations, they say, which help the transition to EV lifestyles. The Verge says that the most notable change for Electrify America's current design are the solar panel awnings. They, of course, shelter you from the sun and bad weather as well, and supply power for the charging station's operations. And it's great that they're putting solar panels on car chargers, but really the amount of power that they generate, even in a sunny climate, is minimal compared to the amount of juice that you want to get into a car very quickly before that car moves. But solar panels on charging stations are more than just there for looks, for PR, to tell people that you're doing a green thing. They can be useful if you have enough of them. No, they can't charge thousands of cars a day from a handful of panels above you, but certainly they contribute, right? But yeah, there's also no denying that it makes a nice headline and people see them and think that they're generating the electricity that their car's going to run on. So, you know, pros and cons. The company is also rolling out these slimmer profile charging stations. They're about 8 foot tall. They are quite slim. I think they look really good. I'm not sure who makes these new ones. I shall find out. Or maybe it's an Electrify America custom jobby. They are 350 kilowatt DC fast chargers, and the screens are recessed, which helps with sunlight glare. And that is a brilliant bit of learning that, again, you just probably wouldn't realize until you build a product and get it in the wild, and then your customers go, it's great, I just can't read the screen. So again, what technology you're using, what display technology you're using, even how they recess the screen into the charger, just set it back a little bit and it'll naturally give it some shade. All these little things which are being, you know, those learnings are happening so fast that I think as the majority of people start to get electric cars over the next decade, they won't experience perhaps what you and I have experienced, which is, let's call them growing pains. Okay, yeah, let's do that. That's a polite way of doing it. You know, you can call you and I trailblazers, if you like. Yeah, that's a bit more complimentary. Now we'll talk about Google searches over the last month or so. As petrol prices have been soaring and deepening the pain at the pumps, people are reacting by searching for EVs. A web search interest in electric vehicles had a record high in the US, and the month of March so far, according to Google Trends, even before the month is out, has been a record month for the searches of electric vehicles. At the minute, EVs are more expensive than many of their fossil equivalents, and rather than shelling out money on a new EV, perhaps people are just researching and finding out more and deciding to make their own mind up. They've heard about EVs, a friend, a relative has gotten one or been talking about them, so that's perhaps why more people are searching. But also, you can't deny the change in pricing at the pumps for various reasons. Over here, by the way, in the UK, most of our petrol and diesel cost is in, the majority of it is in tax and in fuel, not tax so much, but fuel duty. As a way for the government to raise money from drivers, and they cut that by 5 pence because it was heading towards £2 for a litre, and they cut it by 5 pence. And I just saw some research before I went to record this podcast that the average price at the pump has gone down by about 2.5 pence. So the other 2.5 pence, the retailers are pocketing. So, yeah, to drive a fossil-gobbling car is not only disgusting and dirty, but also gets you shafted as well. Well, more and more people are searching for information about electric vehicles and also hybrids as well. Sales have been spiking of that. According to Michelle Krebs, who works for Cox Automotive, the problem, she says, is that the EV supply is currently limited, so people can't get hold of electric vehicles, in some cases for the next year, and so people are having to look at hybrids because they might be more available. All right. Coming up on the podcast very soon, we'll talk about Jaguar Land Rover possibly having their own cell factory and why some charging companies are selling out to battery makers. Stick around, those stories are on the way. Now, though, let's talk a little bit about the Polestar 2 and how it becomes actually affordable, and no, I don't pretend it's a cheap vehicle, but affordable in comparison to its competition, the new 270-mile single-motor Polestar 2, and again, in a pretty kind of normal climate like where I live. We get snow for a couple of weeks of the year, in which case just don't go hooning around on the roads. We don't live in the mountains, and the weather is, you know, it's very mild here. Yes, it gets up to sort of 25 degrees Celsius in the summer and down to, you know, 2 or 3 degrees and freezing temperatures for a couple of months of the year. It is within a smaller window of temperatures. I don't need an all-wheel drive car. Polestar 2 single motor, perfect for me. Now starts at $47,000, including destination charges. Polestar confirming yesterday the price, $47,000 in the US with delivery. That undercuts the Tesla Model 3, which now starts at $48,190 for the base version with the same mileage, 270 miles of range for the Tesla. But of course, considering the Polestar gets the $7,500 federal tax credit and Tesla doesn't, and if you factor in New Jersey things like incentives for the single motor Polestar 2, you can get that for less than $35,000. Now, there's a single motor and dual motor versions of the Polestar 2. You can add the plus pack for $4,000 for the panoramic roof and the fancy sound system, and there's the pilot pack, which adds some driver assist features. You should probably go for that one because it adds the adaptive cruise and the blind spot monitoring, and hey, Polestar is Volvo and Volvo is safety, and so yep, I'd probably add that pilot pack if I could. Now we'll go to the UK and Jaguar Land Rover. Working with Envision AESC for their own cell factory. And if that name sounds familiar, that was the old Nissan company they sold off. Well, Envision AESC started out between NEC and Nissan in 2007, making batteries for the Leaf, sold off after a couple of attempts to sell off their battery company. Nissan offloaded that to Envision in 2018. Still use those cells, though, in the Leaf. And they're currently investing £450 million into a gigafactory in Sunderland. That's the northeast of this country, if you don't know your English geography. And you would be forgiven if you're one of my global listeners around the world. But the Financial Times reporting that the deal being discussed is so big that Jaguar Land Rover, JLR, can have their own battery facility. Now, JLR want to put 6 electric models on the road by the middle of the decade. They'll be using their plant in Solihull in the Midlands as its hub for EV making, according to autocar.co.uk. As for Land Rover, they launched the all-electric Range Rover in 2024. Of course, they'll need plenty of cells for that because you've got to put, well, plenty of batteries inside a Range Rover to make it have some decent range. Staying with energy companies, by the way, SK, the South Korean massive company SK that make battery cells through SK Innovation, they just bought a charging company, a charging provider, charging solution provider, if you like. They're called Evercharge, and they're a US company. First time that the Korean cell maker, SK, has acquired an EV charging company in the US. They were founded back in 2013 in California. Evercharge make EV chargers and operate them as well. SK's battery business sells cells, if you like. They sell cells to VW, Merck, and Hyundai, Kia, of course, and Ford as well. So it's really interesting. I find it interesting, at least, but I'm a nerd about these things, to see a company that was making cells, selling them to the car makers, and now, because just this whole world is turned upside down, see themselves investing and now become a company that make the chargers and operate chargers. They've got a few thousand of them, I think, and I'm not sure Evercharge, not one of the bigger names, but just fascinating that everything is kind of overlapping. It's a bit like the way that power companies, you know, like energy generation companies, which until now you think, well, they're, you know, building wind turbines, or they're building, they operate fossil powered, you know, energy generation, all those kind of things. They're getting into buying EV charging networks and the whole thing, you know, energy and legacy companies moving into this space. Really, really interesting. Now, in the UK government is vowing a tenfold increase on EV chargers by the end of the decade, setting a new target to increase the number of EV chargers on the public chargers at least 10 times to 300,000 by the end of the decade, after criticism recently of the public infrastructure being too slow. And I don't experience that, by the way, but I do have off-road parking. We have got a driveway in this house that we've moved into. We lived in terraced houses. My last house was a 1910 terrace house. Our house in London was a 1915 terraced house, and a road where you had to park on the pavement. I mean, legit, because the lines were on the pavement. It was built for horses and carts in the middle of London. Well, it wasn't really, it was the middle, it was southwest London, called Barnes kind of area. But either way, this is the first time that we've owned a house with a driveway, so I don't find public charging is lacking. But if I did still live in my previous terraced houses, I would certainly have delayed buying an EV because of charging and not having a charger on the wall. Because of those years ago, public charging just wasn't there. Now the UK government says they're going to spend £450 million and encourage more private capital into the sector for what they say are charging hubs and on-street parking. And I think that, I don't know if you agree with me or not, I think that is the golden ticket. Charging hubs, yes, put them in places where lots of people can go to, where there's space, where there's 30 or 40 chargers. Charging hubs are great. Don't put two or three in. Put 40 of DC fast chargers in on a motorway network junction or something. And at the other end of the scale, on street charging. Absolutely. Situate, you know, where there's lampposts that can be connected to EV chargers, where there's pop-up chargers. We've featured those on the podcast before years ago. And with a company called Urban Electric. They're amazing. And a variety of things as well that can mean that you can park your car on the street and you can charge safely, get billed for it, etc. That's really smart. What's less smart is our Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. I could finish that sentence there, by the way, but I'll continue. Linking the need to reduce emissions with the current war, with Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And I think that is just political point scoring, because we should be doing this anyway, regardless of the disgusting things that Russia is doing in Ukraine. We should do this anyway. We shouldn't say, well, we need to wean ourselves off Russian gas and fossil fuels, so here's justification. But you know what? I think it kind of works with the average Joe public, because somebody who I know that is very anti-wind turbines, because we were going to have a, there was an application in where I live. I live on the beach in somewhere called Bournemouth and Poole in Dorset. And there was an application went in for lots of wind turbines out to sea. You'd see them on the horizon, but hell's bells, it got knocked back because, oh, they would look too bad because we live in a tourist area where tourists come to Bournemouth and they'd see wind turbines in the distance. So they knocked it back. And now that person who liked that decision was saying to me recently that they said, oh, you know, maybe we should have more wind turbines, you know, because we don't like Mr. Putin. Like, oh, okay, right, you've just realised that, have you? Well done, you. So, you know, maybe the politicians linking it to these things does score points, but hey, maybe it works. I don't know. What do I know? Right, now we'll talk about NIO and the NIO ET7 luxury sedan going into production yesterday. Delivery start Monday on March 28th. It's a flagship, and NIO want to increase production gradually to meet the standards of mass production they say they're aiming for. Early reservation holders will get theirs from Monday onwards. Customers who chose the battery rental scheme, or battery as a service. So you buy the car, but you don't buy the battery. You get 70,000 RMB off the vehicle, then you monthly subscribe to battery as a service. And it means that the battery dimensions of all their cars are the same. So you might have the need to have the 150 kilowatt hour battery in your car only for a couple of weekends of the year, and you have a smaller one because it's lighter and cheaper. when you're not doing road trips, talking of that 150 kilowatt hour battery pack, by the way, they say it'll do 600 miles or 1,000 kilometers, but that is on the Chinese cycle. So, you know, buyer beware and all that. We can't wait to see some real world tests of this. But either way, the ET7 is a bit of a beast. It's dual motor, all wheel drive, 644 horsepower, 0 to 63.9 seconds, and over 15,000 of them reserved or ordered, I should say. The NIO CEO, William Lee, saying that the rumored number of 15,000 has been exceeded, but he wouldn't say by how much. Now we'll talk about some more battery stuff, actually, more gigafactories being built. You know, this is so many stories around like this, and I absolutely love reporting on every single one of them. Automotive cell company, they're called ACC. They are jointly owned by Stellantis, Total, the energy company, and Mercedes-Benz, building three gigafactories, Germany, France, and Italy, each of them making 40 gigawatt hours of cells every single year. The Italian one is going to be in Termoli. Their existing Stellantis plants making 40 gigawatt hours of cells. They're spending $2.2 billion or 2 billion euros per site in total for $7 billion of investment in these three cell gigafactories opened by the middle of the decade. Man, if you look at what's coming down the pipeline, there is so much good news. You know, when I started this podcast 4 years ago, we were talking about this car is coming, and this car is coming, and this car is coming. Well, fast forward 4 years, I mean, now we can now talk about these amazing cars. Last year and this year, there are so many stories of this gigafactory is coming, this gigafactory is coming. And every time one of those opens, it just unlocks scale. It makes more EVs available for you to buy. And eventually that will drive prices down, make them cheaper. That's great. But a car that if you are expecting your VW ID5, the next story on the podcast today, don't be expecting it anytime soon. Volkswagen delaying the launch of the ID5 by 1 month to the first week of May because of supply chain disruptions coming from Ukraine, unable to produce enough of the exhibition cars and demonstration cars for its sales partners and dealers. And according to autoblog.com, the ID5, which will be made in Zwickau, where they make the ID cars, was put back by a month. That facility also closing down because of supply chain issues, opening up again next week. Now, Amazon going all electric for their heavy-duty stuff, the HGVs, heavy goods vehicles. What we're talking about is the 37-tonners, I'd call them the 18-wheelers, but the big 37-ton trucks that go up and down our motorways, fully electric vehicles are on the way from Amazon. Their fulfillment centres in Milton Keynes and in Tilbury will now have 5 of these HGVs, resulting in 100,000 annual road miles done with fully renewable electricity, 170 tonnes of CO2 not being emitted from these vehicles. And of course, they're just starting out. So they're getting these 5 HGVs on the road. That'll join 1,000 electric vehicle vans on the road for Amazon. And they want 50% of all the Amazon parcels delivered by the end of the decade to be zero emissions. They're also playing around with the best way to get those parcels to your doorstep. So maybe it's electric cargo bikes or electric vans. I've not had any electric Amazon vans turn up at my place yet, but I've seen plenty of people on social media post the pictures of their all-electric Amazon van turning up. But although I would say my milkman is driving a new electric, it's not a milk float, no, but it's left-hand drive, so it must be it arrives at 2 o'clock in the morning, so I've only ever seen it on either my security cameras or when I've been up to have an old man wee, and so I don't quite know what it is. But yeah, our milkman drives an EV, so I guess that's good. Now Mercedes-Benz saying that they will take liability when you drive Mercedes-Benz EQS on their Drive Pilot system. And so Drive Pilot is level 3 under 40 miles an hour. So if you think about those systems that we talk about a lot, like Tesla's autopilot system or full self-driving or Ford's system or any of the others that are out there, they are all level 2 systems. You cannot take your eyes off the road or hands off the wheel, but level 3 you can. And so Mercedes-Benz are ahead of many of the others in that they have already launched their level 3 system, but under 40 miles an hour, which is useful in stop-go traffic and in heavy rush hour traffic. It's called Drive Pilot. And Mercedes-Benz, now so confident in this system, they will accept full liability for any accident that happens as a result of it. In the Mercedes-Benz EQS, the all-electric EQS, there's the cameras, there's the microphones, there's the LiDAR, the mics detect things like the sirens of emergency vehicles and blue lights picked up by the cameras. There's sensors in the wheels of the vehicle which detect if it's wet, and that extends the braking distances. And once Drive Pilot is engaged, you are legally allowed to watch a film, read a book. You have to be available to take control at any moment, but it's hands off, eyes off driving, and it's legal in Germany. Drivers can use their phones, for instance, to make a call, surf the internet, and the level 3 systems are now enabled on 13,000 kilometers or 8,000 miles of German roads. And Mercedes-Benz saying, yep, we'll take liability for that. It's not going to crash, and if it does, it's on us. That's huge. That's huge. Right, final story of today. A video which showed a Tesla flying 50 feet into the air into Los Angeles has done the rounds this week. You may have seen it. I'm pretty sure you've seen it. It was a car stunt gone wrong. It was happening in Echo Park. And the Los Angeles Police Department are now issuing a reward, $1,000 to the person that dobs in the driver in this video. Now, the video is circulated online. The video has been watched by millions of people. And the incident surfaced probably last weekend, last Sunday morning. The Model S sped uphill and it launches into the air when it hits the crest of the hill. And man, it lands badly. Sparks flying everywhere. It travels 50 feet through the air. Front bumper hits first. This is not a Dukes of Hazzard jump. It is nasty and gnarly. And the front end hits first and it bounces around and it hits two cars and a bunch of bins. And Los Angeles Police, LAPD, now saying that the Tesla that was being driven is a rental, but they don't know the driver of the vehicle. So I guess you'd know who rented the vehicle from the owner. The owner must be spewing. But the hit and run reward program will award you £1,000 if you can point the LAPD in the direction of who was driving that vehicle. So, when you see the video, I mean, it's immensely, immensely stupid. Organized as part of a Tesla meetup last weekend. Well done to them, idiots. Right, question of the week with emobilitynorway.com returns Monday 28th of March. A brand new week, a brand new question will start next week. Thank you so much to our premium partners of the podcast, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village of Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good night. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.